Marcello, the ROI guy.
Hi, this is April Morley. I'm co-founder of Genius Drive and the Enterprise Value Collective.
And welcome to the Value Coffee Talk podcast.
This podcast is a service of the Enterprise Value Collective, a community for business value-focused leaders and practitioners, and is sponsored by our value consultancy, Genius Drive.
And our mission, that's to help you accelerate and optimize value articulation in each of your customer engagements and throughout the customer lifecycle. And to talk about a very particular area of the lifecycle, we have Steve Frost here today. He's a go-to-market consultant, and he's very well known for his work, which is where I became familiar with Stephen, as Vice President and Managing Director for TSIA, the Technology Services Industry Association. And we're here to discuss and explore a term coined by TSIA, and that's another acronym, LAER, LAER. Welcome, Steve.
Hey, thank you. Thank you, Tom. Thank you, April. I'm really excited to be here. I love the podcast. I'm a fan. And now I get to be part of it. So this is good stuff for me. I'm really happy. Greetings from Dallas, Texas.
Awesome. Well, Steve,
we're so happy to have you.
Yeah. Before we dig into the business discussions, two things really caught my eye on your profile. One is that you are a Jeopardy champion. Is this true?
It is true. I was filmed in low def, Tom, back in 2002.
Okay.
So, you know, it's funny. You talk about kind of trying to make good things happen out of bad. I was with a company called LoudCloud. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh,
Mark
yeah,
Andrews,
yeah.
Ben Horowitz's this company. I was running North American inside sales for LoudCloud at the time. And we knew they were gonna jettison the entire sales force.
Yeah.
All right. And so we're all sitting around one day talking about like what we're going to do when we get laid off. And I've always wanted to be on Jeopardy. I was 30 years old at the time. And so, but then they didn't have all these mobile tryouts, right? You had to actually go to the studio at Studio City. So about a week after I got laid off, I got my car. I drove down to LA, went to the studio, tried out. And just not to get into too much detail, but there's two rounds of tryouts. One is they give you, at the time it's digital now, but at the time they gave you a sheet of paper with 50 blanks on it. And then they show 50, they don't call them questions, right? You're supposed to clues up on the screen and you write them down. And if you get 35 out of 50, you move to the next round, which was a mock game. So you would play kind of the PC version of Jeopardy. And what people didn't always tell you is kind of at that point, they're not testing you on knowledge anymore. It's kind of an audition.
Yeah. Actually, personality more than anything.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Like, are you somebody who's going to make people change the channel? So I got past that, and about a month later, I got a call, went on, won three times. I was doing really well in my fourth game, got blasted on anagrammed authors. My brain does not do scrambled letters very well, but it was fun. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's almost not fair to the dyslexics that are there, you know, that you have to organize it out of the disorganization.
Well, it wasn't literature wasn't my strong suit anyway. And then you scramble the authors, I'm done. It went from big lead to not. But it was a lot of fun, and it's certainly a good conversation piece.
Well, such an adventure, and it really speaks to the power of telling others your dreams, right? If you hadn't been sitting around talking about what you'd like to do after you get laid off, I wonder if it would have happened.
Yeah, I know, right? Probably not, but good things come from bad sometimes if you don't just sit around and feel sorry for yourself.
Yeah. Absolutely. So the other area is you're the public address announcer for Stanford football for the last 25 years. Can you share about that?
I'm the in-stadium announcer. So if you go to games, anyone who's living in the Bay Area or in California, you come to the games. I'm the one who's goes back and forth between saying who ran the ball, who made the tackle, and then ads for Pepsi. So there's a lot that goes into that, but it's been a lot of fun. I played football at Stanford back in the 20th century. And, this has been a great way to stay in touch with it. And it, again, just a chance to do something fun, and be part of people's experience, I think is a good thing, right? I think about value when we do that, right? They bought this ticket. They want to be entertained. And we haven't been winning lately, so I feel like more of those on us and the video staff. But it's an important part of it, just making people feel like they know what's going on, and occasionally if they're on there, you know, people don't pay as much attention to football in stadium anymore because they're all sitting there scrolling like this all the time. And so sometimes you got to wake them up a little bit, but it's a lot of fun.
Can you do the echo voice, Steve? Now, play. Sorry.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Value Coffee Talk Podcast. So those are the kinds of things that.
Oh, Steven, you just auditioned.
Oh, well, man, I am going to get that.
And now that's our new intro.
No, I'm forbidden from using the announcer voices.
I bet. Too. Yeah. So we will not leverage that.
We don't do that.
We'll have to try that next time. Thanks so much, Tom. We'll do the announcer
exactly.
Version.
Exactly. All right.
Let's move on to talking about, you know, value in technology sales. That sounds more fun to me.
Yeah. Well, let's get down to business because this is really important. First, there are many folks that may not be familiar with LAIR, that term, kind of what it means, why it was developed. Talk a little bit about that. Where did it come from and what does it mean?
Well, TSIA, who I loved and was a part of their organization for 7.5 years, I still think obviously very, very highly of them. They actually coined the term LAIR. It's kind of fallen into almost the public domain, but it's very much a TSIA thing. And, you know, when you were up until, you know, the advent of really SaaS, okay, selling was a very transactional event, right? You bought, the risk was really on the customer. They needed to deploy the technology. And yeah, you might provide some professional services, some help along the way, some consultants might come in, you might hire an integrator. But bottom line is, you bought it, you make it work. And what you realize when you're talking about subscription-based or cloud-based offers is the adoption piece of that is massively critical, right? If they're not using what they bought, first of all, you know, there's no guarantee that you're going to make the money. And we're seeing that with renewals right now, right? We're not using what we bought. So you sell them the wrong thing. You do the wrong deal. You sell them too much, right? We've all been, you know, taught to sell ELAs and we'll call you back in 3 years. That doesn't work very well in a subscription-based environment because if they can't adopt what they bought, certainly, you know, they're not going to buy more. Mm-hmm. And then when it comes time for the renewal, everything gets scrutinized. And if you can't tie the value and the outcomes that you were supposed to anchor on in at the very initial part of the deal, 3 years later, why on earth would they renew? So you're thinking about this as a complete, you know, continuum. And certainly there's different things that have come into that, right? You see things like AWS and some of the hyperscalers where there really is never a renewal event. It's kind of a retain thing where you're just going to use it until you're not. But in that case, that adoption, I think, even becomes more critical. And, you know, we found that when people expand their order, they're a lot more likely to stay on the platform. So all of those parts of LAIR work together. And we do see, unfortunately, and I think this is part of where some of the renewal problems come in, is when those motions of LAIR act and operate in silos. And, you know, they're working on different information, different organizations, different systems, different processes. Things can really fall apart quickly, and you can't have people operating like that. That's a lot of the reason we see the rise of the CRO that's thinking about revenue as a whole rather than just parts and transactions.
Yeah, can you expand on that renewal challenge that you just talked about? How are organizations experiencing that today?
Well, I think, and we talked about this just slightly or a little bit before we got on the podcast, April. We've seen it, and I think your listeners have seen it too. Renewals are tougher now than they've certainly been in a long time. And I might even be as hard as they've been since everybody moved to the subscription model. Okay, so, you know, we talk renewals when it was just break fix and tech support, different story. But now, you know, this renewal is very high stakes because in a subscription and a SaaS model, it's not part of the contract value. It's not the support and maintenance. Like it's the whole thing. Like it's the thing, right? So it's a very high stakes renewal. And, you know, I talk to a bunch of CROs, a bunch of EVPs, and everybody kind of says the same thing about right now, which is, you know, the deals are still mostly out there, but every deal is getting, you know, the approval is 1 to 2 levels higher than it was for the same deal 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. Right. So if it was a director that signed off on it, now they got to go to an EVP. there's a VP now might require C-level approval and stuff that never, ever needed that level of approval before. So, you know, you've got more justification needed, more value, you know, more value, I say realization, but more proof of value before, mm-hmm. as you're taking it up the food chain. You need to arm your internal sellers a lot better than you did before because they got to go make this pitch and you're not going to be in the room when that happens. And so, you know, you've seen that. And then, you know, as part of that, we're talking, you know, even in our own lives, our personal lives, we see subscription fatigue between Netflix and Paramount Plus and Apple TV and all these other things that we subscribe to. And we don't even know what we are. We don't know what level we're at. Okay, cash is coming down to a crunch. That gets scrutinized. Mm-hmm. Like, are we really using this? How much are we using? How many seats are we using? How much capacity are we really using? So maybe you might still get the renewal, but there's going to be, you know, some real carve outs here, and people are going to say, do we need this level? And so you have X amount of recurring revenue and you take away X minus 20%. Tough to grow because you got to backfill that 20% with expansion or new customers even mm-hmm. to get to where you were. Still better to start at zero every month. That's for sure. But that, you know, that holding on to the revenue base you have is about as critical as anything you can do in a subscription world.
Yeah, absolutely. When you spoke about some of the things that perhaps a revenue leader can do, which is one, you can focus on the value and proving that. And I do think that whatever you do, it needs to be proactive, because if you don't think the customers are being proactive in this, you'd be fooled, right? They are proactively looking at how big their tech stack has grown. They're proactively Absolutely. Making consolidations, and you have to be very active in this. So talk about some of the things that you suggest a revenue leader do, whether that be organizationally, because you spoke about this being, you know, sometimes a silo issue, whether it be an outcomes-based issue.
Well, I think there's a few things that need to happen here, Tom. First things first is, and maybe this is a little bit counterintuitive to those of us who grew up doing this and have been doing this, like I said, since the 20th century. But first things first, you can't wait until 30, 60, 90 days for the renewal.
Yes.
Okay. This needs to happen at least 180 days in advance. And I think it's more than that. Okay. And so you've got to be out in front. And I will say this, you know, when you are renewing, that is your opportunity to grow too. Okay. And so you're cracking open the contract and maybe you've got to get creative with it, but there is a, you know, again, an opportunity. But if you're, you know, an expansion is never done on a renewal that's done under duress. Mm-hmm. It just isn't. Then all of a sudden you're scrambling. So this has got to happen way in front of the renewal, and there needs to be process. This cannot be something you just rely on your people to remember to do. What's our process? What's our playbook? What are our best practices? Is this baked into Gainsight or Salesforce when you're going to do these things? Mm-hmm. So you're right, Tom. Being proactive is really the number one thing. Okay, great. But if you're just sending a quote 180 days ahead, that's not going to do any good either, mm-hmm. okay? One of the things that we always talk about is there a value realization call? All right. And what that means is like, hey, how are we doing with it? And ideally, you've got that information. In a SaaS world, you know whether they've adopted. And I think there's a lot of CS leaders who skip that step, who don't include, you know, in their health score. It's not like, are you actually using it? And so, you know, you've got to find, are they getting are they using it? Are they receiving value? They may lie to you and say they're not because they know they're going to be coming into negotiation. But I see too many people that just skip that step mm-hmm. because we've always just been able to send the quote in. All right. Well, you can't just send the quote in. You've got to find out. You've got to really re-anchor. And I think in some cases, almost resell what you're doing and what you've been done. And if they're saying, you know what, we're not seeing value out of this, then, you know, honestly, third practice is there needs to be an escalation path. A lot of people, you know, we see some companies are doing their renewals, you know, actually having the CSMs execute the commercials, which I don't always recommend unless you're on a very, very simple kind of single offer platform and you got really skilled CSMs. So whether it's a renewal specialist or somebody's in there like, yeah, I don't necessarily want the salesperson to do it, but man, there's got to be a bat signal, you know, right? You got the data on the customer. If value needs to be resold and you've got somebody who's kind of a renewal specialist, they may not be like, you know, a 23-year-old renewal specialist negotiating against a global procurement agent at a telco is like Alabama playing against South Alabama. Man, they got a shot. So, you know, you need to be able to bring in, you know, the A team there if need be. So those are three or four practices we think about. But, you know, again, so much of that goes back to the original deal. And I talk all the time, you know, it's funny. And this is something CROs need to understand. When I'm in front of a bigger audience, I like to run a polling question, which is, okay, when your customer success team or your post-sales team, whatever you call them, is handed a deal by sales, do they know why the customer bought from you? And 75 to 80% of the time, they'll say, no, we don't know. We have to ask.
That handoff.
And sometimes they ask sales and sometimes they ask the customer.
Yeah.
So like what you're doing from the beginning, how will you help customer success, make your customers successful if you have no idea what your customer thinks success is? It seems kind of intuitive, but you skip the step. And so how you sell it makes a big difference. And I know you guys talk a lot about that.
Yeah, you brought up some really good points there. Selling in early, or like opening the renewal conversation very early. And you talked about how, you know, they may not want to share if it's close to a negotiation. And I think that, you know, doubles down on the fact that you need to start early so that you're far away from the negotiation such that you can talk about value and it's a value add for the customer in that process. And you talked about how the handoff is incredibly important, making sure that the customer success team understands, you know, the reason that the customer purchased, what value they were hoping to achieve as part of that process. But not every organization is quite there yet, and change can be a difficult process. So how would you recommend that organizations, you know, drive further adoption of these best practices?
Well, I, you know, great question, April, and you're absolutely right. And I, my experience is as having done this myself and have seen people have done it well and I've seen people haven't done it well. It's really baking these best practices into your systems. And I know that's not sexy, right? You know, it's like, oh, well, I went to this podcast today and this guy was talking about technology reinforced best practices. Boy, that's riveting, let me tell you. But, you know, if you're relying on, again, a 27-year-old CSM who's thinking about 8,000 other things and what they have to get done to make sure they run these plays, and it's not built into their calendars and it's not built into their systems and it's not built into their metrics, then it's unrealistic to expect that they'll just remember to do it. So these things like value realization conversations, you know, not just when they're supposed to do it, do you have templates? Do you have the information in front of them that will allow them to have that intelligent conversation, right? It's kind of like if I'm selling, I'm selling somebody life insurance, you know, to a early 50s male, say some blonde guy living in Texas, right? And you show up and say, hey, you know, early 50s blonde guys with, you know, mild hypertension have a risk of heart attack. You should really consider buying life insurance. And that's one thing. But if you show up and you say, hey, here's your EKG, you got an irregular heartbeat, you need life insurance, that's a whole different conversation. Mm-hmm. And I think we have that level of information. With AI over the next 3 to 4 years, we're absolutely going to have that level of information to be able to have not just a generic value add conversation. Hey, did you find value out of it? To be able to say, no, this is where you are finding value out of it. This is how you did adopt it. And those sorts of conversations empower the person having that conversation other than, hey, are you using it? got to know that. You should not have to ask the customer in 2024, especially if you're in a cloud-based or SaaS-based environment. Maybe if you got, you know, kind of legacy stuff, okay, maybe. But you should not have to ask the customer, are you using it?
I agree.
You got to know. And if you don't, then you've got a failure of people and you definitely have a failure process.
Yeah. Stephen, we've got some value leaders, some revenue leaders that have worked on instrumenting their solutions to actually begin measuring that value, dashboarding it back to customers, mm-hmm. capturing the use cases of how it's being used, how much time is being saved, those kind of metrics. And I do think that that's a key thing that you see in some consumer apps, like you saved X amount of dollars this month by using this product, right? That's kind of what we need to do, is instrument in a lot of ways the solutions to take out some of that. But regardless, I think you're spot on with it has to be integrated into the process, into the daily life of the customer success manager, of the account executive that's managing that account. It mm-hmm. needs to be part of that motion. And the handoff from pre-sales to post-sales, it absolutely needs to be streamlined and seamless. And there should be a value report that goes over that says, these were the strategic reasons the customer implemented the solution. Sales knows that. Why does customer success have to guess at that or ask the customer, even worse? Here are the pains that were being solved. Here were the impact of those pains and the cost of doing nothing. Here's the value that we're predicting out of it and the ROI that's anticipated. All of those are known facts that pre-sales has. That should be packaged up in a very understandable way, maybe into a first value realization presentation to the customer so that the story is already pre-built through the process.
Yeah, you're spot on, Tom. I tell people, never skimp that internal handoff.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes impersonal, especially in high volume technology, right? So, you know, if it's a $500,000 or $1 million deal, a lot of times that happens.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the $5,000, the smaller tech, you know, kind of the maybe the SMB space, it doesn't happen. But I encourage you, if you have somebody who's responsible for this customer after the sale, then that, yes, the systems and processes are important, but you need to not skimp it. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of the pathology as to why we don't do that is this new idea, and we talk about layer, right? That while I don't think layer should operate in silos, we kind of have different people who are in charge of different parts of layer. If your salespeople are the ones who are driving adoption, that's a really bad idea. Okay, they are not good at that. Do not have them do it. There's a reason that farmers don't rope cattle. Mm-hmm. All right. You got hunters, you got farmers, you got people with different skill sets, you got different systems, different mm-hmm. processes. Do not put your salespeople in charge of adoption. It's like, hey, Dom, have you adopted today? You know, you should really adopt. don't do that, right? But you've got different people with different skill sets, different processes. But a lot of times when sales was just the one throat to choke, there wasn't a need for this handoff. There wasn't this need for knowledge transfer because it's all in here.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say this too, in an age of high turnover, relationship-based selling or relying on relationships is profoundly dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
If for no other reason, then there may be turnover. You know, we at TSIA would always say, well, who owns the customer, sales or customer success? No, the process owns the customer. And yeah. And relationships, while wonderful, are not scalable.
Mm-hmm.
It's a total mic drop moment in a way. Because
I felt good about it. I felt really good about that one. Yeah.
yeah. And I mean, I think you've made some really great points about how, you know, consistency can only exist with a process to keep it alive.
Yeah,
so
you're right.
Totally understood. So what is the one piece of advice you'd like to leave the Enterprise Value Collective with today?
Well, the biggest thing is, don't leave this, and I talked about it a little bit, April, don't leave this to people. Okay. And I know that sounds maybe glib, but people are distracted. People mm-hmm. are variable. You have good people and bad people. You have people who normally are really good at their job, but are going through a sick parent at home, or who have a distraction, or are really trying to figure out, can I do this job remotely? So many things are going into this. And if you're just simply relying on your really good people that you've hired to execute on this stuff, and just, you know, sales, especially renewal sales, we say that sales is art, not science. No, renewals is science, not art. Okay. It is process, not people. And yes, the people have to be involved. And yes, people having a good relationship is beneficial. But you've got to take what you know to be the best practices that will lead you to renewal, that will lead you to re-anchoring that value, and make sure it's happening, you know, in a predictable way, on a regular basis, you know, in a way that allows you to be in front of this, because these renewals and a lot of that back end of the sales cycle, if you're expecting it to go smoothly, it probably isn't. Which means, you know, proactivity, process, value, things have to be done by people who know how to do it with the information they need to do it, in such a way that even if it goes sideways, you still got time to react.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us today, Steve, on the Value Coffee Talk.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me. It's been an absolute joy.
Yeah, you are the first Jeopardy champion we've had, the first announcer, public announcer that we've had, and an absolute great go-to-market expert. So thank you, Steve. If you liked what you heard in this episode, please hit the like button, subscribe so you can stay up to date on the latest episodes. Join the Enterprise Value Collective, group of your peers. We help to drive best practices. And until next time, Enterprise Value Collective, keep sharing and growing together.